I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. The white sand beaches of Biloxi, Mississippi, draw millions of visitors each year.
This is Biloxi, an American Riviera. Legend and lore mingle with the world of today in this amazing peninsula city.
Big fantail shrimp. We saute them in butter, garlic, and hot sauce.
Lee works as a line cook at a trendy restaurant on Main Street.
That's all I know. I mean, I've worked in the kitchen for over 35 years. That's all I've known. I've done all different types of cooking, also catering. I've done, you know, country club. I've done fast food. So I came to Biloxi because I have my sister here, and plus I had a good idea of the restaurants and the food industry that was here.
Work was going well until the coronavirus outbreak was declared a pandemic in March. At first, Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves resisted closing down businesses, asking residents to trust in the power of prayer instead.
Dear Heavenly Father, please be with President Trump, Vice President Pence, the leadership team in Washington as they try to deal with this once-in-a-lifetime pandemic.
But in early April, Governor Reeves finally ordered non-essential businesses, including restaurants, to close, putting people like Lee out of work, scrambling to feed his three sons.
COVID-19 totally took me out of work. I mean, we already lived week to week, but took us from week to week to nothing.
But now, just weeks later, the governor is reopening some businesses, putting people like Lee back to work as Mississippi's death toll climbs. Today, America's poorest state lifts lockdown.
Head southwest on Dauphine Street, then turn right onto Ursuline Avenue.
So the drive from New Orleans to Biloxi is not particularly long. It's only 90 miles long, and you're driving along pretty sparsely populated, often empty rural high roads that are surrounded by lush green forest that has kind of bloomed in recent months.
Oliver Laughlin is the Southern Bureau Chief for The Guardian US. He's normally based in New Orleans, Louisiana, but earlier this week he headed east into Mississippi.
Empty retail parks, big strip malls, there's a huge lake that you drive over, Lake Pontchartrain.
So you can see this huge, vast, empty lake. Shimmering blue water and basically being one of the only cars on the road. Pretty extraordinary.
Why were you interested in reporting from Mississippi?
He spoke to Mythalie Rao, a senior producer on Today in Focus, where this episode first aired.
So Mississippi is the poorest state in America. It is also the hungriest state in America. So there are issues with access to food, with obesity and underlying health conditions.
We are in the top five in terms of hypertension. In terms of obesity, we're in the top five of many states. In other areas, we're number six across the nation in the number of smokers per capita in Mississippi.
And it's also one of the states that was one of the slowest to close up. The Republican governor there, Tate Reeves, he issued a very liberal directive on what one would class as an essential business. And this is at a time when the neighboring state of Louisiana was really going through a severe crisis with coronavirus and became one of the major hotspots.
Across Louisiana, the numbers are simply staggering.
It scared me. I'm telling you, it's like I screamed. It's like you're kidding me.
The state has seen the fastest growth rates in the world.
So, Oliver, you are watching Louisiana register more and more cases of COVID-19. Meanwhile, next door in Mississippi, it was more or less business as usual. Why was Governor Reeves so reluctant to ask people to stay home?
I think what you've seen with people like Governor Reeves and other governors in conservative states is a desire to follow the rhetoric that is coming out of the White House.
America wants to be open, and Americans want to be open.
And at times, Donald Trump's rhetoric on what the correct response is with the coronavirus has been incredibly confusing and difficult to follow. And so you've kind of seen this scattergun approach across the country when it came to who shut down first and at what time. So ultimately, Reeves and a host of other conservative governors across the US South didn't issue stay-at-home orders until the decision not to close down basically became politically untenable.
We are now at the point in Mississippi's cycle where drastic measures may be required. Today is the day. We are announcing a shelter-in-place order. It will go into effect Friday at 5 p.m.
You mentioned that Mississippi is one of the poorest states in the country, but where you are headed, Biloxi, does have a pretty healthy economy. What are some of the industries in that area?
Yeah, so as you said, Biloxi is in one of the more prosperous areas of Mississippi. It's by the coast. And so it's a pretty picturesque town. About 25% of its economy is driven by tourism. There's also a relatively strong fishing industry there.
I am Biloxi. Hundreds of thousands come to my shores to play, to shop. And when the sun goes down, the sky lights up with excitement. I am Biloxi. Men and women.
But when you drive into Biloxi, basically the first thing that you see is a line of huge hotels and casinos. And that's really what's kind of dominated the industry of that town for decades now.
Now open, the President Casino at Broadwater Beach Resort, Biloxi, Mississippi.
Has led to a degree of prosperity that is in marked contrast to much of Mississippi.
You were visiting at the time of year where the weather's warming up, it's starting to get nice, and you spoke to one restaurant worker who's normally doing very brisk business this time of year.
Well, before the pandemic, I was working anywhere from 40 to 45 hours a week.
Can you tell me about Lee Wilkerson Price?
So Lee Wilkerson Price moved to Biloxi a few years ago and really moved there to try and shore up his life.
I've been through hard times and I try not to look in the future too much. During hard times, I just live for the day.
He has battled homelessness, he battled drug addiction, and wanted to come to Biloxi because he saw a financial future for him and his three sons.
A 21-year-old, 18-year-old, and 14-year-old. Two older ones work with me. The 18-year-old, he's still in school. He's graduating this year.
So he's been working at a seafront restaurant there for the past couple of years. And basically, when I asked him how his life was doing before coronavirus, he basically said he'd turn a corner and that things were getting much better for him.
We're doing really good. I mean, I have two sons that work with me full-time also at the restaurant I work at. They are dishwashers. They're my two older sons. We all pitch in and we all work together as a family to get everything paid. So we actually have it very easy, even though we do live week to week. But that all three of us got laid off at the same time.
How did he feel when he heard that his restaurant would be closing because of this pandemic?
He was absolutely devastated. And even reflecting on it a month after he heard the news, he teared up when he spoke to me about it.
I'd say it was about 4 days leading up to it. We all knew something was happening. Everybody was breaking off the Lysol and the hand sanitizer a lot more and watching their phones and listening to the news. Well, I had a feeling something was getting ready to happen. We didn't quite know what it was. And that last day, I really can't explain it because I was totally lost. I just felt like everything ripped out from underneath me, It was rough.
Basically, his entire world and the security that he had built up for himself was taken away with a single directive from his boss.
We were actually at work. And we're told pretty much go home until further notice,
That sounds devastating. What did he do when he got the news?
So the moment Lee lost his job, he instantly tried to think about ways to improvise.
The day I lost my job, got laid off, the next morning day, we had an opportunity to go mow a lawn, didn't we? And we needed a lawnmower. We had an opportunity to go mow a lawn, and we needed a lawnmower, so I went out with the last few bucks I had in my pocket and bought this lawnmower.
So he went out and bought a lawnmower and got his son to come out with him to mow lawns for $20 a go.
There you go. He's not used to me asking to do the edging. I usually do that.
But increasingly realized that really wasn't going to be enough to keep him going through.
We've cut out snacks, special little treats. We don't have them, We just concentrate on breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and just getting through the day.
So He turned up to food banks to try and get food. He relied on handouts from local advocacy groups.
Next thing I know, someone reached out to me on Facebook, and next thing I know, I had a big old box of biggest box of pancake mix I ever seen, biggest box jar of syrup, and it was a great blessing. And there's even a few bucks in there for gas, which was very touching, because at the time I didn't have no gas to go anywhere.
And he also relied on the kindness of his neighbors, who he told me invited him into their homes to feed him and his family.
I had neighbors come over one night right after the pandemic hit, and the mother didn't speak English. She only spoke Spanish. She had her daughter with me, and they said that they had a turkey. I went over to their house, and it was the biggest, most beautiful spiral ham I'd ever seen. And I told them, I said, this isn't a turkey, this is a ham. Do you want me to just put it in my freezer for you? And they're like, no, eat it. And, you know, and I got the little girl speaking for them, and that was a blessing. And all through this, you can ask my son, Danny. I always say, God don't bless me, he spoils me.
So Lee is out of work, but obviously for no fault of his own. This is much bigger than him. Was there any kind of public assistance that he could access?
Lee obviously qualifies to obtain food stamps now, which is a federal government program that allows low-income Americans access to stamps to exchange for food. He's also eligible to claim unemployment as well, but he's had a huge amount of difficulty accessing both those programs. The department overseeing unemployment claims in Mississippi has been completely overwhelmed by this crisis.
Unemployment, I can't get nowhere on that. I've been on the phone with letting that ring and ring for weeks on end now. I mean, every Monday I sit there for 4 or 5 hours and let it ring and nothing happens. I don't get nobody.
So before the pandemic hit, Mississippi was receiving around 1,000 new unemployment claims each week. But since COVID-19 has happened, they're now receiving about 46,000 claims a week.
Make no mistake, this is not only a public health disaster, this is also an economic disaster in Mississippi and in this nation. We understand that with the workload at the Department of Employment Security being 30x compared to what it was 2 weeks ago, I just ask you to be patient, put yourself in those employee shoes.
What about from the federal government? The Trump administration was sending out stimulus checks to Americans around the country. Did that make a difference for Lee?
So Lee received his check from Donald Trump, $1,200 check that every American is entitled to as part of the stimulus package that was passed by Congress.
So you're talking about a $6.2 trillion bill, and this will deliver urgently needed relief to our nation's families, workers, and businesses. And that's what this is all about.
Donald Trump has been at pains to make sure that his name is on every one of those checks that is sent out. But basically, Lee told me that was essentially not enough for him.
It's helped me live day to day the past 2 weeks. I put food in the fridge. We basically taken care of day-to-day needs with that. I don't think it was near enough, I think it could have been something a little better, you know.
But you're not frustrated with that? That's not like a...
No, because I'm not one looking for a handout, you know.
So Lee made it clear he's very ready to go back to work. But are customers ready to come back to his restaurant?
So national polling is very, very clear. Most people very much oppose the idea of reopening too quickly and putting public health at risk.
Overall, most Americans do not support opening certain public spaces. As far as restaurants go, this is very revealing. A huge 78% of people polled do not feel comfortable eating out at a sit-down restaurant
but
right now.
On a casual visit down to the beach in Biloxi that I took on Sunday, it's pretty clear that there are a number of people in South Mississippi who are very ready and willing to get the economy going again.
When you made your way to the beach, what was the mood like there, and what was the scene?
So it was quite surreal to me to go from basically a deserted, empty ghost town, which is what Biloxi is when you go down the main drag, and onto the beach where there were hundreds of people, many of whom were observing social distancing and clearly just trying to get a breath of fresh air, basically, and escape from, I guess, the oppression of what this shutdown is doing to people. But on the other hand, there were quite a few people who were not observing social distancing. I walked past a hut that was offering jet ski rental, and there were about a dozen people queuing up, none of them wearing masks, all very closely packed into each other, just waiting to get on a jet ski, basically. And some people I met who were very, very skeptical about, you know, official statistics on the number of COVID-19 deaths, skeptical about how lethal and dangerous the virus actually is.
From what I've read and heard, a lot of stories about inflated numbers of infections, and a lot of it has to do with the way that those are counted. I'm a little bit skeptical of some government studies.
And skeptical about what exactly?
I work in an essential industry and in transportation, and it is, I don't know of any one person that has contracted, you know, coronavirus.
But you don't dispute that 60,000 people have died from it in the US, do
you? Again, I'm skeptical of that number, saying that it solely contributed to COVID-19.
And so that was a pretty confronting thing to hear from people who had just sort of turned up for a beach day.
What don't you think we know about it?
I don't know, because, like, you know, some days they say to wear masks, some days they say not to wear masks. You know, just like you said, certain places are open and everybody's crammed in. Other places are not. You're not allowed in. You have to do curbside service. So I don't know. It's just not. It's not making sense. I mean, I hate to say it. It's just, you know, people are going to die and it's going to happen. It's not the best. But is that from COVID? Do we really know that for a fact? Some of it's, you know, being elderly. Some of it's respiratory, different things. I just think we have to get back to work.
That seems shocking. So those are the beachgoers, but you spoke to some healthcare workers too.
I take it very seriously. I'm very concerned every day that I go into the hospital.
I imagine they had a different perspective.
Yeah, so I spoke to Leah Campbell, who is a physical therapist who works directly with COVID-19 patients in the Biloxi area.
So for the past month, I've been working strictly on a COVID unit. This is not in the ICU. This is, and patients are sick enough to be hospitalized, but not sick enough to be on a ventilator. My responsibility is to help them move, help them prevent secondary complications from staying in bed, just help prepare them to go back home, hopefully. That's the goal.
And when I spoke to her about what I'd seen down at the beach, I don't think she was shocked. I think she was angry.
There's no excuse for it. I think it's incredibly selfish behavior. There's no shortage of credible and accurate information about this disease for people to educate themselves. So in my mind, people are making a willful decision to put other people at risk. And I have seen the consequences of doing that. It really honestly makes me angry.
Next, a closer look at the spike in coronavirus cases and the decision to reopen.
Well, let's talk about those numbers. Oliver, what has the caseload been like in Mississippi, and what is the death toll there so far?
There have so far been 7,800 cases in the state and around 310 deaths at the time we're talking. But what has become incredibly apparent in Mississippi is the racial disparity when it comes to those who are dying from COVID-19. So 176 people who have died from COVID-19 in Mississippi are Black. That's 57% of the death toll, but they only make up 37% of the population.
And by the way, Mississippi was one of the first 10 states in the nation to actually report deaths and cases based upon demographic data, based upon race and other areas. And I'm proud of the Mississippi State Department of Health of being proactive and being willing to.
And that's really a trend that you're seeing across the United States, but is incredibly pronounced in places like Mississippi and Louisiana in the Deep South.
And that, unfortunately, seems to echo what we've seen here in the UK, where Black, Asian, and ethnic minority populations have been particularly hard hit in this pandemic. But if you just look at the numbers, and the death toll in Mississippi so far has been in the hundreds, but the unemployment figures are in the many tens of thousands each week, is there a case to be made that the governor is doing the right thing?
I think it depends who you ask, really.
But, you know, the impact was sort of immediate. 8 casinos shut down, 12,000 jobs, you know, just stopped.
You know, I spoke to the mayor of Biloxi, who basically said, absolutely, yes, that is the right thing to do. He recited one of Trump's catchphrases throughout this, which is that the cure shouldn't be worse than the disease.
The cure is going to be worse than the problem, because, you know, the problem, is addressed properly. Again, with the plan to reopen, with the contact.
And suggested that, you know, he feels comfortable in the amount of relaxing of guidelines that the governor has issued.
We're actually going through, you know, what we need in order to figure out how we can get back to a reasonable, normal state. Of course, nothing will be normal.
The guidance from the White House has been that states should be seeing a continued 14-day drop-off in the number of COVID-19 cases before they start reopening. And so what you're seeing in some states around the country that are reopening, places like California and a few other Democratic locations that are doing it, they're really observing that data before they make those moves. That's absolutely not the case in Mississippi. So last Friday, Mississippi saw its highest number of diagnosed COVID-19 cases.
Today, the state of Mississippi saw its largest single-day increase in COVID-19 cases. We also saw our largest increase in death numbers.
And now, on Monday, it reported its second highest number of COVID-19 cases. Despite that, the governor has pushed ahead with trying to reopen.
What's his justification for doing that, for disregarding the numbers?
So Governor Reeves basically says that Mississippi is not comparable to other hotspots.
Governor, why are you reopening Mississippi at all when you haven't met the White House guidelines of a steady downward trajectory for two straight weeks?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, Chris, and it's a fair question. And what I would tell you is that you have to understand that Mississippi is different than New York, and Mississippi is different than New Jersey. In those two instances, and by the way, my neighbor to the west was the same in Louisiana. They had a huge spike in cases over a very short period of time, and then, but Mississippi's not like that. What we have seen is for the last 30...
Because it's had a lower number of cases that hasn't really peaked above 300, 350, he is suggesting that the guidance he has received directly from the White House is that those guidelines that Dr. Birx and others have put out there don't apply to Mississippi. But if you speak to people like Leah, who are working on the front lines of this pandemic, I think that they see it very, very differently.
Yeah, again, I think it's a reflection of the ideology of putting the economy before public health. And I think that's irresponsible, and I think it's unproductive, to be honest. If your goal is to get the economy up and running and healthy, then you need healthy people to make that economy run. And this is not the way to go about it.
So she seems very upset at the government for not handling this better. What about Lee? Did he blame Governor Reeves or President Trump?
So I asked Lee a few times whether he blamed anybody for what he was going through, and he was very reticent to blame anybody.
Do you have views on, like, how well Trump has done as president in this particular moment?
I like to say he's done the best he could do. We've never really had to go through this before, so who do we have him to judge against for how he's handled it, you know?
He's deeply religious and said that he relied on his faith to get him through this time. He also said that, you know, he's incredibly thankful for the charity that he's received throughout the pandemic. But he was very reluctant to talk about what the government owed him and what he should be entitled to as a citizen.
When you spoke to Lee, Governor Reeves had started to ease some of the restrictions on what kinds of businesses could open. Lee was beginning to pick up shifts at his restaurant again. They could serve customers takeout. And as of today, restaurants in Mississippi can serve dine-in customers too. What are the new measures taking effect in the state as they try to get the economy running again?
So Mississippi is moving very quickly to try and reopen. So they are now allowing gatherings of 20 people out in the open air. They're opening up restaurants that have to be deep clean before they're opened and work at 50% capacity. They're opening up public parks and retail services as well. So it's one of those states that's moving very quickly towards reopening when you contrast, you know, what you're seeing, even in states like California, which are also moving towards reopening, but doing it on a much more measured, slower pace.
Are these measures enough? I mean, was Lee worried about his safety?
I think Lee, he understands the risks. Lee reads the news. He understands absolutely what's going on. But at the same time, he says that the benefits to going back to work outweigh the risks because he needs the money to support his family.
As long as everyone obeys by the rules, you know, the social distancing, I believe we'll be all right. I mean, some of us have to get back to work because we haven't been able to get through to unemployment or food stamps. And I believe some of us need to get back to work because me personally, I don't want unemployment. I don't want food stamps. I don't want handouts. I want to earn my own.
But are you worried when you're going in? Because obviously it's still a pandemic. There's still no immunity to this virus. There's no vaccine. You know, experts are kind of cautioning that, you know, going back too soon could lead to another spike in infections. Is that something that you're worrying about when you go back?
I don't have time to worry about that. I have to take care of my family. I mean, really, that's how I have to look at it. I just have to lay my faith in God, and I'm not worried about it.
I'm not 100% sure whether it's not still playing on his mind a little bit. But what other people will say to you is this is not a choice that people should be forced to make, and that it's unfair that poor workers like Lee, who have already been living paycheck to paycheck, who are reliant on their employers to basically keep their livelihoods going, should be forced into choosing between putting their personal and their family's health at risk and going back and taking money for a job. There was news earlier this week that even as Trump is pushing nationwide to get states to reopen their economies, his administration is basically privately projecting that this is going to increase the death toll across the country. So the death toll could reach around 3,000 per day by the beginning of June, which is higher than the number that we have at the moment, which is 1,750. So I think there is definitely an acknowledgement at some levels of federal government that this push to reopen is essentially going to cause more deaths.
Oliver, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for today. This episode first aired on Today in Focus, our global news podcast made by the Guardian team in London. If you like these episodes, check out Today in Focus on the Guardian website or subscribe by searching for Today in Focus on whatever app you get your podcasts on. Today's episode was produced by Mithali Rao and sound design was by Axel Cocoutier. Additional production by Miles Martignoni. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. Okay, catch you tomorrow.